This is The Doctor Is In, your bi-weekly podcast that discusses all things technical and not so technical. The Doctor Is In podcast is produced by ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, and sponsored by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. And now, here's your host, QST editor Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and the doctor himself, Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Hello, I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY.
And I'm Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Joel, I want to talk about a topic that you really don't hear much about, but it certainly is pertinent to amateur radio, and that's RF safety. I'm particularly thinking about hams, and there are many more of these now, who are operating indoors, and they're really in proximity to their antennas. And so that's certainly a considerable concern.
It is, and it's important to know what the rules are and how you fit into the rules, because it's not only your safety that you're concerned about, but if you're in a, let's say, an apartment building, and there's, you know, you have an antenna on floor two, and there's kids playing on the floor right above, and you don't even know they're there, and they could be even closer to the antenna than you are.
Oh, yeah.
And you could potentially cause them harm or cause yourself liability in the process. So it's very important to keep all of that in mind.
Absolutely. And of course, we've had books published. We've got pages on the ARRL website devoted to assessing your RF safety environment. And can you address that a little bit about what do you have to do if you're a ham, you're concerned, and you want to find out?
Well, it doesn't even matter if you're concerned or not. If you're a ham, you have to, and you have a transmitting station.
Yes.
You have to assess your station. It's part of the FCC rules. So
yes.
Whether you think it's a great idea or not, it's something you have to do. Now, fortunately, for a lot of hams, there's an exclusion zone of relatively moderate power on most bands that doesn't require a detailed assessment. And I have the numbers here in front of me, sort of. If you're operating on 160 through 40 meters, for example, you can put up to 500 watts into your antenna and be assumed to be safe just because of the nature of the RF at those frequencies, because it's dispersed over a wider area. The power level reduces in steps down to 100 watts by 15 meters, and it's 50 watts at 10 and 6 meters. But note that that is the power at the antenna, not at the transmitter. So if you have a transmission line between your transmitter and your antenna, as many of us do, it has loss in it, so you actually can transmit more than 50 watts into the transmission line. So for example, if the transmission line happened to have 3 dB loss at 10 meters, you could put 100 watts from your 100-watt transmitter into one end, and the 50 watts that comes out the other end at the antenna would be still within the area that's excluded from requiring a detailed assessment.
What about your proximity to the antenna? Does it take that factor into account?
Yeah, this includes everybody everywhere, and I'm sure there are places you could put the antenna that would cause you discomfort. But in general, what this rule means is if you're operating at those levels, you don't have to do a detailed assessment, period.
Oh, okay. Got it.
And there are some other special cases about mobile stations and repeater stations. And so it's all written down in the book ARL had published, which is RF Exposure in You, which is no longer available in print, but is available for free on the ARL website.
That's right.
So, it's worth looking at, and in fact, you're kind of required to look at it. But if you're in that zone that I just mentioned in terms of power levels, you don't have to go through a great detailed assessment. And even if you do, if you're kind of over that, you're running more than 100 watts or more than 50 watts on 10 meters and you want to be sure you're safe, it doesn't take very much to do an assessment. And you don't have to do an assessment down to the last gnat's eyelash. You have to just do an assessment to the point where you show that your power level is not sufficient to be above the limits that you're allowed to use. As I say, every ham has to do that. And, oh, by the way, every time you change antennas or transmitters or anything else, you need to do it again. And if you move your antenna closer or further to the property line and you have to do an assessment, you need to check and make sure the levels are appropriate for two kinds of environment. One is the one where you're in, where it's so-called controlled environment, where the idea is you're there and you know how often you use it and so forth and can make appropriate adjustments. But your neighbors don't have anything to do with the process, and you have no control over that. So at the property line or at your neighbor's apartment floor above or ceiling below, you have to make sure you're safe. That's very important stuff. Not only because it's a rule, but the other thing that happens is I've had neighbors say, gee, that's quite a fancy antenna you're putting up there. How much power are you putting into my kids in the backyard?
Yes.
And it's very comforting to be able to say, oh, well, I'm glad you asked, because this is very carefully regulated by your Federal Communications Commission, and I can show you my assessment that I'm well within the limits that are considered safe for RF exposure, both to my property and to yours. That should solve the problem. Because every now and then you get people that are trying to push that concept into town rules and so forth, and they're really not allowed to. The FCC has control over that, and it's important that all people that are concerned about it know that it's something that is tightly regulated by the FCC and not something that they need to be concerned about as individuals.
Yes. Now, when you bring up the concept of the assessment, how do you do? I mean, do I have to get laboratory grade material and go running around my yard? What does an assessment involve?
Well, an assessment involves looking at the distances between your antenna and, let's say, the property line, and figuring out, you know how much power is going into the antenna, or you should be able to calculate how much power is going into the antenna, and you know how much gain it has in different directions. There are all kinds of tables in that book that we just discussed that lets you just take that kind of information, and it will determine immediately what the levels are that you can, how much power you can run under the different circumstances. Now, that's just a very cursory look, so it's a very conservative estimate. If you get into trouble with one of those, you can do it in more detail, and you can take into account ground reflections, and you can take into account all the conditions of things around the antenna and elevation angle, the fraction of the signal that's going to be at an angle that's going to reach your neighbor. For example, you look at a horizontal antenna, depending on the height, the radiation at very low angles is usually small compared to the radiation at higher angles, much to our discomfort if we're trying to work DX. But so your neighbor who's down 6 feet above the property line, let's say where his head is probably has a very small fraction of your transmitted power coming towards him, even if the antenna is pointed at him. So you start taking those factors into account. Then there are other factors as well, like depending on the fraction of time you transmit versus the time you listen. So you can derate based on that. And all of these things are spelled out carefully in how you do it. And different modes have different duty cycles. You know, FM is a solid, steady carrier all the time you're transmitting, whereas CW and SSB are more like 25-30%. You know, you have to use the numbers they'd have. Those are just off the top of my head. But so it's sort of a cumulative kind of thing over a certain period of time. And it's not rocket science, and it's not something you have to have test equipment to do. You could actually use test equipment if you wanted to prove a particular point, but you can all do it with a piece of paper on a rainy day and not have to worry about any of this stuff. It's just easily done.
Now, so far you've been talking principally about HF signals. What about VHF, UHF?
Oh, that's true. VHF and UHF actually have potential to be more harmful in a way, because the energy is typically, with directional antennas, much more focused. So the good news is you know which way they're pointed.
Yes.
The bad news is if they're pointed across your neighbor's property, you need to take appropriate action. And you may find that you actually can't point your antennas in certain directions at a certain power level. That's a serious issue. I mean, most, if you think about it, microwave ovens operate at, high UHF frequencies,
oh, yeah,
for example. And that's the kind, people have been killed walking in front of radar beams, for example.
Sure.
So that's because of the highly focused and the high frequency of the radiation. So it's more sensitive. That's where, in fact, a lot of this started back in the 50s and 60s. The staff at the U.S. Embassy in Moscow was having all kinds of medical problems, and they noticed that their building was being constantly bombarded with microwave radiation. So they didn't know why this was happening. One theory was that they were looking at the reflections off the windows, and by using Doppler measurements, they could actually decode the voices inside the building from some distance away. And it wasn't ever conclusively proved that the microwave radiation was the source of the problem that the people were having, or, a lot of things going on, drinking water, this, that, and the other thing could have been there. But that started part of the investigation into this. And it's happened more recently in Havana.
Yeah,
the last
I remember.
Few years. And yeah. Nobody's sure about what's going on here exactly, but
yes.
It seems to be tied to microwave radiation. So, here we have very high frequency signals focused right at the place where the targets are for whatever purpose. And that kind of thing is what caused people to reassess the safety levels, because it seemed like there were medical problems happening. Now, nobody knows exactly what medical problems were caused by what radiation in what place. Never been conclusively coupled,
No. But
there was something happening.
What about the, I'm thinking of the guy that has a handheld transceiver with your typical rubber duck antenna. He's holding it right up to his face, right up to his head. Is that an issue at that power level?
Well, no one has found it to be. I mean, you're talking 2 meters and 70 centimeters. There's a level that doesn't require a detailed assessment, and I suspect most handheld transceivers are at that level. So it's sort of similar to cell phone kind of thing, but perhaps a little more power. I haven't heard that any stories about that being a problem, but the people that do it for 5 minutes once every 3 months or something.
True.
The problem you get into is if you're talking about somebody having an exposure that continues on for a long period of time. And, you know, not only the head, by the way. If you have it hanging on your belt, I don't know what organs your flexible antenna is next to, but, you know, you're doing, you know, the best ones probably are the metal helmets with the whip
yes.
sticking out the top that you occasionally see at Dayton. But, you know, it is RF. You know, I've done it, and I still, my brain works some days better than others, but...
Well, what about mobile operators? Yeah, there are some people that run considerable power in their cars.
They are, and they're pretty safe in general, I guess, with the metal-bodied car. I don't know about people with a convertible like mine or a fiberglass-bodied car, but the RF pretty much is on the outside of the car unless they foul up their antenna grounding in some way. There is a little more concern, perhaps, about pedestrians that you're next to. If you're going by fairly quickly, it's not a problem, but if you're stuck in traffic, you know, you could conceivably cause some problems to a pedestrian, I would think.
Yeah, maybe.
And, you know, I was... I was recently doing a product review testing of a small loop antenna that I had out on my patio, and I had to look carefully and see what the flight pattern was of the birds that were going to the bird feeder because they were I was afraid I'd shoot down a bird. I used to do this. I was involved briefly at the ballistic missile early warning system radar transmitter in Thule, Greenland, which is, at the time I was there, before it's been replaced now, it was... I think the most powerful radar known to man, and it had a, I forget the numbers, 1,200-foot wide antenna array, no. parabolic shaped in two axes, and two beams coming out of that went at different angles so you could determine trajectory and so forth. And it actually used to shoot down birds. Not that there were that many birds in Thule, but but any bird that happened by. And I think that was one place where an Air Force technician was killed. And, you know, it was one of those sad things. He didn't even realize it was going on until his stomach was cooked.
Well, I'll tell you what. I have some questions coming up, or I have a question coming up.
Okay.
But let's hear from DX Engineering, and we'll return.
I'll be here.
Ever talk to a salesperson who didn't know the difference between a rotator and a rotary phone, or a Yagi and a yo-yo, or a ballon and a ballerina? You'll never have that problem with DX Engineering. When you call us, you'll talk directly with knowledgeable amateur radio experts, people who speak your language. When you contact DX Engineering, you're dealing with operators who are as passionate about the hobby as you are. This means better service, expert technical advice, and a commitment to your complete satisfaction, even long after your purchase has been made. Whether you're newly licensed or a longtime operator, you'll always find a friendly ham who understands exactly what you need on the other end of the line. Plus, you'll find a huge selection of amateur radio equipment, get the fastest shipping in the ham universe, and shipping is free on most orders over $99. Let's talk about your station. Visit us at dxengineering.com. That's dxengineering.com.
And we're back, Joel, and I have a question from Bob, W5OBT, and he's asking, I live in a building that's governed by a homeowners association that restricts visible outside antennas. I decided to get back into ham radio again, so I put up a stealthy inverted V dipole antenna. The feed point went to the apex of my roof with the antenna wires going down the eaves on each side. In my anxiety to hide the antenna, I ran my RG8X coaxial cable down the eave beside one of the antenna wires. Thinking it over, I now believe I should have let the coax come straight down to the ground and thence to my transceiver. I also put the ends of the antenna along the eaves. I think I should have let them droop on each. I get a low SWR on my antenna analyzer, but I have no way of knowing what is going on when I transmit on CW. What do you think, Joel?
Well, I think, first of all, I should mention that a homeowners association that restricts visible outside antennas is a lot better than one that restricts antennas, which some of them do.
So yeah, all antennas.
Yeah, yeah, you're much better off. But first of all, about the wires themselves, I don't think having the wires at the eaves will be a problem unless it's a metal roof or a metal insulated roof or some kind of a metal structure element along the eaves, then it shouldn't matter that it's right there. But having the coax next to one side will definitely result in a lot of RF on the outside of the shield of your coax.
Yeah, I would think so.
Which will come back into the shack and, well, first of all, it's not going to radiate where you expect it to. It'll probably mostly radiate in your house. So some of the power that you're putting out is not going where you want it to go. So that's kind of a problem. More of a problem is likely to be that it's going to get into things and can lock up your transmitter. It can cause RF feedback and all kinds of issues. So there are a number of ways to do that. I mean, your idea of letting it drop straight down is probably the best from an antenna standpoint, but it's not the best from a stealthy standpoint.
No.
I would think the best from a stealthy standpoint, if you have access to the attic, and there's an attic vent at the eave, peak of the eave, as there is at my house, if you bring the coax in through that vent and bring it about 10 feet away from the antenna and then bring it down, if you can drop it into your house from there, that would be a good way to do it. One, depending on where your shack is and so forth, sometimes you can come into the corner of a closet or something from above and drill a hole and have it not be too much of an issue. But not everybody will have access to the attic, and it depends on the living environment. You might not even have that floor of the house. So bringing it straight down is probably the best way, and if that's the only solution you can come up with, painting it the color of your siding will make it almost invisible, depending on what's there, or if there's a lot of foliage around or whatever, it won't be very noticeable. If you can't do anything else, putting a common mode choke, which can be just a ferrite toroid with a bunch of turns of the coax around, I guess I have to use caution here, the RG8X has foam dielectric, so not good to wind it on a toroid, but what you can do is you could get perhaps a dozen ferrite beads on the coax and put it just about at the end of the antenna, just beyond the end of the antenna wire, and that should choke off the RF going down the coax. Thinking about that a little more, I guess what I would do is if the side of the antenna that you have the coax against is connected to the shield side of the coax, then the shield will sort of just act like a thicker piece of wire there, and that'll be kind of nice, and you can put the beads just below the antenna, and that should choke off the RF, and that should work not quite as well as having it come down perpendicular, but it will probably work just fine. Now, the other thing is, if your antenna works the way you want it to, and you're making the contacts you want to make, and you don't have any problems with RF in the shack, curling your mustache, or locking up your transmitter, or resetting the clock radio, or you know the other things that happen with that, you can just leave it. You know, if you don't have any problem, don't find a solution.
Yes. Don't fix something that isn't broken.
That's right. We know that it's not working optimally, so it's not a bad idea to fix it. But push comes to shove, and you can make it work and talk to the people you want to, it's not going to do anything dramatically bad to anything.
Absolutely. Thank you, Joel.
My pleasure.
If you have a question for the doctor, email us at doctor@arrl.org. The Doctor Is In podcast is sponsored by DX Engineering at www.dxengineering.com. Background music provided by Purple Planet at www.purple-planet.com. This podcast is copyright ARRL. All rights are reserved. Until next time, I'm QST Managing Editor Becky Schoenfeld, W1BXY 73, and thanks for listening.